Hello there, this is VKE3OTN, the official call sign of the Radio Amateurs Alzheimer's Club of Australia, with the regular transmission of news and information for members and friends of the club. This broadcast is presented via several transmissions, most occurring on the first Monday of each month, except January. Details of the times and frequencies of the relays of these broadcasts by various stations are available on the club's website at www.raotc.org.au. The broadcast can also be streamed or downloaded as an MP3 audio file from the RAOTC website for up to 6 months from the month of the broadcast. That website address again is www.raotc.org.au. Callbacks will follow most of the broadcast transmission so that members and other listeners can give reports and make comments or suggestions. If you listen to this broadcast, please take a few minutes to participate in either a check-in or a callback. The order of each callback will be announced by the station operator. This is VKE3OTN and associated relay stations for the Radio Amateurs Oldtimers Club of Australia with the August 2022 broadcast of news and information for members and friends of the club. This broadcast has been compiled by me, Bill Roper, VK3BR, and I am presenting the news today. In addition to club news, today's broadcast will include a current news item presented by Clive VK6ESW, as well as a couple of historical items. But first of all, old-timers of the club and listeners will recall that I was involved with the compilation, presenting and dissemination of the monthly RAOTC news broadcast for 15 years from 2001, and had been retired from these tasks for the past 6 years, apart from helping out from time to time with the 20-metre and 40-metre relays from Melbourne. Unfortunately, due to ill health, our regular broadcast compilers and presenters of recent years, Bruce VK3UV and Ian VK3JS, have had to retire from the broadcast, and we are having trouble finding suitable replacements. Andrew VK3CAH has stepped forward and is helping out, but we are in desperate need of some more assistance. Fortunately, with the advent of electronic communications, we are no longer dependent upon local Melburnians to assist. Can you help? Think about it. And if you think you can help with any aspect of compiling and presenting the content of these monthly broadcasts, please contact me, Bill Roper, VK3BR. My contact details are available on the RAOTC website and also in any recent issue of OTN Journal. Now, first of all, club news. RAOTC AGM 2022. Attendance at RAOTC AGMs has, for decades until COVID, only been convenient for Melburnians to attend. Now, thanks to COVID, we have discovered that AGMs conducted via Zoom are not only practical, but very effective. One of the real pluses of Zoom AGMs is that RAOTC members from all over Australia can actively participate. Please note, the RAOTC AGM 2022 will take place from 2 p.m. Eastern Australian Standard Time on Thursday, the 15th of September. Full details on how you can register and participate in the AGM 2022 will be published in the September 2022 edition of OTN Journal. Please make a note in your diary now for Thursday, the 15th of September. RAOTC Management Committee. It is generally considered that the optimum term for people to serve on the committee of a leisure activity group is 3 years. However, the majority of the remaining 7 RAOTC committee members have served on the committee for over 10 years, some of us closer to 20 years. Fortunately, times have changed, and now, because of Zoom, committee members no longer need to be located in Melbourne, and can in fact be located anywhere in Australia. Currently, our only committee member not situated in Melbourne is Peter, VK8ZZ, who lives in Darwin. It would be great if we could get some more interstate club members to nominate for membership of the RAOTC Management Committee. Would you like to be involved? Do you feel that you could contribute? If so, please consider nominating for the RAOTC Committee at the AGM 2022. A nomination form to become a committee member will be available on page 60 of the forthcoming September 2022 edition of OTN Journal. The committee would very much like to be able to consist of representatives from all over Australia. Melbourne Luncheons. For several decades, the twice-yearly RAOTC Melbourne Luncheons were held at the Bentley Club. Unfortunately, that venue no longer exists. It turned out to be quite a difficult task to find a suitable replacement which satisfied all of the RAOTC's requirements. However, President David, VK3ADM, and Vice President John, VK3XM, have found a new venue, the Caulfield RSL, which seems to satisfy all of our requirements. It is very close to train and tram transport, and also to Nepean Highway. Full details for the September Melbourne Luncheon will be published in the September 2022 edition of OTN Journal. New RAOTC member. I'm very pleased to announce that Keith Winkler, VK7KW, became an associate member of the RAOTC on the 2nd of July this year. Welcome to the club, Keith. I trust you enjoy a long and enjoyable membership of the club. And please feel free to join in any of the callbacks after this broadcast. Silent Keys. It is with regret that I advise of the following members who are now Silent Keys. Noel Saunders, VK6NS, RAOTC member number 1493, became a silent key in August 2021. Keith Dixon, VK4IW, RAOTC member number 1158, also became a silent key in 2021. And Doug Raper, VK3VBA, RAOTC member number 1812, became a silent key on the 27th of June 2022. Let us pause for a few moments in memory of our departed colleagues. This is VK3OTN, and Associated Relay Stations for the Radio Amateurs Alzheimer's Club of Australia, with the August 2022 broadcast of news and information for members and friends of the club. I now hand over to Clive, VK6CSW, with a current and topical news item entitled The Sun and Sunspots.
The following article was published in Space Weather News, dated the 5th of July 2022, and is entitled The Sun and Sunspots. The Sun, a typical star, has a diameter of approximately 865,000 miles, nearly 10 times larger than the diameter of Jupiter, and is composed primarily of hydrogen. The Sun's core is an astonishing 29 million degrees Fahrenheit, while the pressure is about 100 billion times the atmospheric pressure here on Earth. Under these conditions, hydrogen atoms come so close together that they fuse. Right now, about half the amount of hydrogen in the core of the Sun has been fused into helium. This took roughly 4.5 billion years to accomplish. At some point in the future, when the hydrogen is exhausted, the Sun's temperature at the surface will begin to cool, and the outer layers will expand outward to near the orbit of Mars. The Sun, at this point, will be a red giant, and 10,000 times brighter than its present luminosity. After the red giant phase, the Sun will shrink to a white dwarf star about the size of the Earth and slowly cool for several billion more years. sunspots. One interesting aspect of the sun is its sunspots. Sunspots are areas where the magnetic field is about 2,500 times stronger than the Earth's, much higher than anywhere else on the sun. Because of the strong magnetic field, the magnetic pressure increases while the surrounding atmospheric pressure decreases. This in turn lowers the temperature relative to its surroundings because the concentrated magnetic field inhibits the flow of hot, new gas from the sun's interior to the surface. Sunspots tend to occur in pairs that have magnetic fields pointing in opposite directions. A typical spot consists of a dark region called the umbra, surrounded by a lighter region known as the penumbra. The sunspots appear relatively dark because the surrounding surface of the sun, the photosphere, is about 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit, while the umbra is about 6,300 degrees Fahrenheit. Sunspots are quite large, as an average size is about the same size as the Earth. Sunspots, solar flares, coronal mass ejections, and their influence on Earth. Coronal mass ejections and solar flares are extremely large explosions on the photosphere. In just a few minutes, the flares heat to several million degrees Fahrenheit and release as much energy as a billion megatons of TNT. They occur near sunspots, usually at the dividing line between areas of oppositely directed magnetic fields. Hot matter called plasma interacts with the magnetic field, sending a burst of plasma up and away from the sun in the form of a flare. Solar flares emit X-rays and magnetic fields, which bombard the Earth as geomagnetic storms. If sunspots are active, more solar flares will result, creating an increase in geomagnetic storm activity for Earth. Therefore, during sunspot maximums, the Earth will see an increase in the northern and southern lights and a possible disruption in radio transmissions and to power grids. The storm can even change polarity in satellites, which can damage sophisticated electronics. Therefore, scientists will oftentimes pre-position satellites to a different orientation to protect them from the increased solar radiation when a strong solar flare or coronal mass ejection has occurred. The solar cycle. Sunspots increase and decrease through an average cycle of 11 years. Dating back to 1749, we have experienced 23 full solar cycles where the number of sunspots has gone from a minimum to a maximum and back to the next minimum through approximately 11 years cycles. We are now well into the 24th cycle. Daily observations of sunspots began in 1749 at the Zurich, Switzerland Observatory. One interesting aspect of solar cycles is that the sun went through a period of near zero sunspot activity from about 1645 to 1715. This period of sunspot minima is called the Maunder Minimum. The Little Ice Age occurred over parts of Earth during the Maunder Minimum. So how much does the solar output affect the Earth's climate? There is debate within the scientific community how much solar activity can or does affect the Earth's climate. There is research which shows evidence that Earth's climate is sensitive to very weak changes in the sun's energy output over time frames of tens and hundreds of years. Times of maximum sunspot activity are associated with a very slight increase in the energy output from the sun. Ultraviolet radiation increases dramatically during high sunspot activity, which can have a large effect on the Earth's atmosphere. The converse is true during minimum sunspot activity. But trying to filter the influence of the sun's energy output and its effect on our climate with the noise created by the complex interaction between our atmosphere, land, and oceans can be difficult. For example, there is research which shows that the maunder minimum not only occurred during a time with a decided lack of sunspot activity, but also coincided with a multi-decade episode of large volcanic eruptions. Large volcanic eruptions are known to hinder incoming solar radiation. Finally, there is also evidence that some of the major ice ages Earth has experienced were caused by Earth being deviated from its average 23.5 degree tilt on its axis. Indeed, Earth has tilted anywhere from 22 degrees to 24.5 degrees on its axis. But overall, when examining Earth on a global scale and over long periods of time, it is certain that the solar energy output does have an effect on the Earth's climate. However, there will always be a question to the degree of effect due to terrestrial and oceanic interactions on Earth.
Thank you, Clive, VK6CSW. This is VK3OTN and Associated Relay Stations for the Radio Amateurs Alzheimer's Club of Australia with the August 2022 broadcast of news and information for members and friends of the club. And now for some history. Wireless news 111 years ago. These days we tend to take radio, or wireless as it used to be known, very much for granted. However, as radio old-timers who are interested in honouring the history and heritage of our hobby, it is often fascinating to look back and appreciate what made headlines about radio, or wireless, many years ago. The Marconi Company published the first issue of the journal, The Marconi Graph, in April 1911. It was the first journal written especially for wireless communication and circulated largely amongst engineers and operators. However, in 1913, the name was changed to The Wireless World, and in April 1913, the first issue was seen in the newsstands. Now, here are some interesting news items exactly as they appeared in the Marconi Graph magazine in June 1911, just over 111 years ago. Wireless telegraphy at the Coronation Exhibition 1911. No doubt many people are mystified by the technicalities involved in the working of wireless apparatus. Although most of us, if not all, have read about the mysterious way in which messages are flashed through space by the means of wireless telegraphy, the actual working of the apparatus has been witnessed by but a limited few, and for this reason Marconi's Wireless Telegraph Company have had two of their wireless installations placed in the science section of the exhibition, one representing a ship at sea and the other a coast station. Two operators are in attendance daily at both these stations and demonstrate periodically how wireless messages are transmitted and received from ship to shore, or vice versa. The public will also have an opportunity of sending Marconi grams either to ships at sea or to their friends abroad, as the stations act as a bureau for the acceptance of wireless messages. Another news item from the Marconi Graph from 1911, entitled Tracked by Wireless. As in the Dr. Crippen case, when wireless telegraphs played such a prominent part in tracking criminals on the high seas, a somewhat similar case recently came to light, although in this instance public excitement was not so great. It appears that Monsieur de Bardi d'Arrest, a well-known Parisian, eloped with a governess, but their plans were frustrated when the steamer arrived at Quebec. A Marconi gram was dispatched from Paris to the SS Lake Manitoba, on which the eloping couple had sailed, and consequently they were detained on arrival at Quebec. Monsieur d'Arrest, who admitted his identity at once, put an end to a mystery which had been occupying the attention of the Paris police for some considerable time. In connection with the use of wireless telegraphy in this case, it is a somewhat remarkable coincidence that the pilot Gaudreau, who piloted the steamer SS Montrose from Farther Point with Dr. Crippen on board, also brought in the SS Lake Manitoba. Another news item from April 1911. Wireless telegraphy in the House of Commons. In his annual statement in the House of Commons, Mr. Herbert Samuel, Postmaster General, made some complimentary remarks concerning wireless telegraphy. He stated that the number of British ships fitted with wireless telegraphy had more than doubled, the number now being 290, and the number of wireless telegrams dispatched during the last 12 months had increased by 60%. Wireless for airships. It is understood that the Admiralty have appointed Lieutenant R. M. Groves to take control of the experiments which are to be carried out with a view to adapting wireless telegraphy to the new naval airships. It is expected that he will shortly enter upon his new duties at the Naval Torpedo School at Portsmouth, where special experiments are now being carried out. Wireless operators in the Navy. Wireless telegraphy promises to solve, to a great extent, the difficulty of finding employment for post office telegraph messengers who have passed the age limit. It is impossible for all of them to be appointed to the permanent staff of the post office, but owing to the rapidly increasing use of wireless telegraphy in the Navy, there is a large demand for wireless operators in the naval service, and the Admiralty has decided to give special facilities to postal employees in filling the vacancies. A chess match at sea. Another instance in which wireless telegraphy has enabled passengers of two liners on the high seas to participate in a game of chess was recorded when the chief officer of the Cunard liner, Altonia, won a game with the third officer of the Austrian SS Laura. During the whole of the play, neither vessel sighted the other. And that concludes the news quotes from 1911, a time when radio or wireless was new and exciting and at the leading edge of technology. Haven't we come a long way since then? This next news piece, entitled Radiation and Mobile Phone Towers, is an opinion piece written by Ron Cook, VK3AFW, in 2014. However, radiation still concerns many people today. And Ron wrote, "There is confusion in the mind of the public over what constitutes radiation and what is dangerous. Personally, I blame the educators, but that's another story. Fear arising out of ignorance. Not in my backyard syndrome, and venal considerations I am sure motivate the campaigns against mobile phone towers and other masts carrying antennas, including amateur radio installations. The authorities have responded by sponsoring research and mandating rules for exposure to RF and other radiated energy sources. In Australia, the ACMA has imposed rules on radio amateurs. Radiation is a term that covers any emitted energy that travels out from a source and propagates according to well-known laws. This includes radio waves of all wavelengths, as long as thousands of meters and as short as 1 millimeter. It also includes even shorter wavelengths that intrinsically have the potential to cause ionization, such as X-rays, nuclear decay, or fusion emissions and cosmic rays. It also includes the greatest cause of cancer arising from radiation, sunlight. I've yet to see protesters on the streets demanding that the sun be turned off or moved to another suburb. Campaigns against mobile phone towers have continued over several decades or more. Paradoxically, many of the protest supporters can be seen holding their mobile phone to their heads for long periods each day, apparently ignorant of the much higher field strength from the phone as compared to the tower. I have seen the results of RF surveys in Melbourne, and most of the RF soup comes from TV and FM radio stations, not from mobile phone towers. The effects of radiation, both ionizing and non-ionizing, have been researched for over a century, and no deleterious effects have been found from the non-ionizing radiation until it is intense enough to raise the body temperature beyond the body's ability to regulate it, which requires more than 10 kilowatts per square meter at HF. RF is actually successfully used for therapy and has long been used to cauterize surgical incisions. However, it's been argued that no studies had been conducted on long-term exposure, that is, continuous exposure for 10 or more years. The Mobile Telecommunications and Health Research Program was set up with the support of the United Kingdom government to investigate and report on a range of aspects of RF exposure. Their last report covers mobile phone towers, as well as other topics, and can be downloaded from the internet. A newspaper report on their work appeared in the Melbourne Herald Sun on Wednesday, 12th of February 2014, and I quote, "Mobile phones declared safe. Mobile phone radio waves are harmless to humans." That's the conclusion of a group of British researchers who have been investigating the issue since 2001, publishing close to 60 peer-reviewed papers on the way. In its final report, published back in 2014, the Mobile Telecommunications and Health Research Program said it found no evidence that exposure to base station emissions during pregnancy affects the risk of developing cancer in early childhood, nor was there any link to leukemia. Laboratory testing also showed that radio waves had no effect on biological tissue on a range of frequencies. "We can now be much more confident about the safety of modern telecommunication systems," said Program Chairman David Coggan. And that's the end of that quote. Now, while this is a solid, scientifically based report, it won't silence most of the protesters, was Ron's opinion back in 2014, because their motivations are too ingrained or have too much to do with money to be swayed by any report. It is, however, something that should stand up in any tribunal or court, and it is worth noting by any radio amateur. And thanks for that news item, Ron Cook, VK3AFW. In keeping with a long tradition, we conclude this broadcast with a humorous short story. The Retirement Card. Finally, at an age when he had to retire from his own company, a boss decided to mark the occasion with a farewell party. He wanted all of his staff to express their appreciation for him on a card, which was duly sent round to each department for signature. But when the card was returned, he was disappointed to read stock phrases like, "The place won't be the same without you," and "wishing you a happy retirement." So he said to one of his longest-serving employees, "John, you've been with me for 20 years. I want your comment on my card to be from the heart, to express how you really feel about my retirement after working with me for so long." Slowly but firmly, John wrote on the card, "The best news in 20 years." And that concludes the RAOTC News and Information session for August 2022. Many thanks to those who have relayed the broadcast this month. Your invaluable help is much appreciated. A reminder that the next RAOTC News and Information broadcast, compiled and presented by Andrew, VK3CAH, will take place on Monday, the 5th of September 2022, on the same frequencies and at the same times as today. Don't forget, if you missed all or part of this broadcast, you can download the MP3 audio file from our website at www.raotc.org.au. Callbacks will follow most of the broadcast transmissions today so that members and other listeners can give reports and make comments or suggestions. So if you have listened to the broadcast, please take a few extra minutes to participate in either a check-in or a callback. The details of each callback will be announced by the relay station operator. This is VK3OTN signing clear from today's news and information session. 73 from Bill Roper, VK3BR, on behalf of the RAOTC Management Committee.